Curly to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. And one more thing, get your name out there. Get your name.
Hi, this is Marty Kine, and you are listening to Paleo Tech.
This week, we are delighted to welcome Jeffrey Hirsch to the program. Jeff is currently a strategic advisor at PubMatic, leading supply-side platform. Before that, he was at SundaySky, and he was also the CEO of Audience Science, an innovative ad network that may or may not have invented the DMP for its big client, Procter & Gamble. Jeff was also the founder and CRO of FastClick, and from 2001 to 2004, and was at ValueClick. Lots of clicks. He'll sort it out for us.
It's who knows you. It's not who you know. It's who knows you. We get our capital gains from our connections, not our brains. It's not who you know, honey, honey. It's who knows you.
Did you have entrepreneurs in your family? I mean, where did that come from?
Yeah, my father was always going from place to place. He believes in the punch card days that he may have invented Match.com. no way to prove or disprove that. But yeah, we've always had that. And my mom's worked for herself as well.
You mean a dating service using punch card?
A dating service, yeah. That's actually okay. How he actually met his second wife, my stepmother.
So you were in California?
In California.
At the dawn of the internet. So what was your experience of that? Did you see that it would be transform the world and the way we live?
Well, I did see that. So in 1996, I wrote a business plan for a company called AdClick. And it was really a precursor for what the ad networks would become. DoubleClick was around. In fact, I actually printed every page you could find on the web about advertising, online advertising at the time. But that's how little there was that I could actually print it. And of course, it's funny that I printed it.
You printed it to do research into the business?
Exactly. So AdClick never really came to be. I did sign up a few publishers, but didn't know enough about raising money and things like that. So it was a good idea, but for its time, probably more before my time, it's more like it.
What year was that? 94?
That was 1996.
Okay. So the browser existed. Netscape existed.
Yep. Yep. I did not invent the internet, but.
No. You were there. So I was sort of joking in the intro. I said, ValueClick, FastClick, and then InterClick. We had founder InterClick on the best. Well, why all the clicks?
Yeah, it's interesting because there was also ExpertClick, which was pre-ad ECN, and Jeff Green was there. And I actually worked with him and the CEO for a little while as well. So the joke was anything with the word click in it in Santa Barbara, I would be there. So yeah, ValueClick was first, then FastClick, then ExpertClick, and I did end there. But yeah, it was pretty funny.
What did you do with ExpertClick?
Because
this is Southern California, right? So it's not Silicon Valley. Yeah.
All of those companies were in Santa Barbara, as a matter of fact. Commission Junction started there, a number of other companies. It was somewhat of a mecca of online advertising in Southern California, more so than even in Los Angeles. So a lot of the stories I hear on your podcast are from folks in Silicon Valley or the East Coast. Yeah. We had our own thing going on in Santa Barbara, and of course we can go surfing after work. So it was great.
You had the good quality of life, and I do notice that the Trade Desk ended up launching in Southern California as well.
Yeah, they actually, I think, a lot of the people, it's all 805 area code, so that's what matters. Uh-huh.
So the dot-com boom, so this is 96, and then the dot-com boom, it was roaring 96 through 99 to 2000, and what were you doing in that era?
Prior to being in the dot-com world, I owned a software company that was on the Inc. 500 list that did software for film and video production and television post-production companies. So that was kind of a little bit of an orientation. So while I was thinking about what's coming up with the web, I was still working in the entertainment field. And then, yeah, I saw ValueClick, and I absolutely believed in the network model, and that's what AdClick was going to be about. So I actually took the business plan that I had written for AdClick and walked in to ValueClick, and that's when Brian Coriot, the original founder, was still there, and he was an entrepreneur, so we bonded. And then at the same time, He brought in a professional to be the CEO, Jim Zarley, who was very experienced financially, not necessarily a media and marketing person. And so I was brought in to set up the first publisher development group and bring on inventory. And that was the beginning.
So there were a lot of ad networks for a while. It was big business. And how could you just explain to us how they worked? Like,
yeah, I mean,
why were there so many ad networks?
Well, I mean, think about where we were then.
Yeah.
And I go back to things like radio, right? So there's an unwired radio network is a collection of many programs distributed on radio stations around the country that can be tied together and sold as a bundle, you know, to one advertiser to reach across many. So it certainly made sense that that was going to be a valid way to work on the internet. You know, what we had no idea about at the time was the proliferation of websites and all the things that comes with that. So the concept was, you know, build an ad network with a few hundred sites, quality sites, sell advertising, and then let technology deliver and optimize the campaigns. But obviously, you know, as things continue to grow exponentially, the number of websites and the number of opportunities for fraud and quality issues and all those things also grew with it. Conceptually, though, it made good sense.
So, but ValueClick, though, was successful and it had a good exit.
Yeah, ValueClick was really successful. You know, interestingly, they did their IPO on April 1st, 2000, the last day before the
good timing. Good timing.
And I mean, speaking of their success, if you think about it, they started early, and people kind of forget about it. They DoubleClick invested $85 million in the company for a 35% stake pre-IPO. Later, they went public, as we just mentioned, at $76 million. They were heavy acquirers, including FastClick, Commission Junction, Gerbaz Shahal's first company, Click Agents, they bought pre-Blue Lithium. And later, they rebranded as Conversant and later sold to Alliance Data for $991 million and now operate under the Epsilon brand.
So they still exist.
Well, they still exist. They did very well. Yeah.
They were persistent. You launched FastClick in 2001.
It was actually in 2000 also. I left ValueClick before the IPO actually.
Okay.
And found four aerospace engineers, honestly, down the street from me in Santa Barbara. So aerospace used to be a big industry in Santa Barbara and Galena. UCSB had an engineering group that fed that. When these four guys saw what ValueClick was doing and felt like they could be faster, and hence FastClick. So I was the first business person brought in to help get FastClick going, it was exciting. You know, the interesting thing that happened with FastClick is because of the crash. What we were building was to be a CPC ad network like ValueClick, but instead we had to flip it and go on a CPA model. So we had technology that did an amazing job of being able to take in an advertiser that would pay us on CPA and convert it through the technology and buy and pay CPMs. And the technology would do all of that. So we could go to any advertiser and offer them. It was basically all you can eat to be able to come in and only pay on results, paid a healthy 70% of revenue to the publishers. And some of the customers we had at the time were Right Media buying for AOL, Casali Media, who's now Index Exchange, and a number of others.
This was an important time of rebuilding, but the market was very soft in 2001. CPMs were very low. So I guess that's probably why you had to go to the CPA model.
It was, right. Yeah, no, it would be difficult to do a startup and even with CPC because you're competing against ValueClick and what was then had changed from TechnoSurf to ad.com. I used to compete against TechnoSurf at ValueClick. We had a hub dev, a team that were hired out of call centers, had stacks of books with website owners' names and phone numbers. And we'd call up and say, did you know you could make money by running ads on your site? We'll pay you 20 cents a click. And then TechnoSurf would call and say, we'll pay you 21 cents. And you know, that's how all that started. So very early on the pub dev stuff. FastClick, we built it with $300,000 in friends and family money. And did a Series A for $75 million about 3 years later, which was basically buying the company. And interestingly enough, that transaction for us was handled by Perseus Group in 2004, and which is where I first met Terry Kawaja. Also going way back.
Pre-Luma, yeah. So where was FastClick located? In Santa Barbara?
Santa Barbara, of course.
Oh, okay. And where were you, what were your offices like?
In the beginning, it was a hole in the wall, and we had a generator that we had to run down the street to plug it in to be able to use it if our power went out. But then things did go very well, and we were very profitable and moved into a nice building. I mean, there's really no bad areas in Santa Barbara, but in a more industrial area, and had a big building to ourselves, and it was good times. It was fun times.
Is it, what was the ultimate fate of FastClick?
So what happened was we raised that money, which again, essentially was selling the company, and a new CEO was put in place after the raise, and he was dead set on setting the company to compete directly in search with Google. So we had no search.
It's ambitious.
Yeah. We had no search DNA, and I'd made some money and didn't really think that was the right way to go. So I decided to leave.
You were right.
Yeah, I was right. FastClick did an IPO 5 years to the day after ValueClick. They always wanted to go after ValueClick, and it was broken. So I had some stock in the company. I was looking for a way to make it worth something. But in the meantime, I spent a couple months working with a company called ExpertClick, again, Click Santa Barbara, which later became AdECN. Mm-hmm. And that's where I first met Jeff Green. He was really the brains behind putting that together, and arguably the first exchange in the market. We used to fight on the phone with Ramsey McRory all the time whether Right Media was first or us. And frankly, Jeff and I were both hampered by the ExpertClick CEO and ability to execute. And so I didn't stay very long. He stayed, obviously, for a while, morphing the company into AdECN, selling it to Microsoft. And he's done okay since then.
Yeah, not bad. So what was your impression of Jeff Green when you met him and worked with him?
You know, it was early. We were all trying to figure things out, and super smart. He got it. He knew how to tell the story, and the vision was very good. They just didn't have the tech at that time to really make it work. So
there is an argument about what the first exchange was, and I think it's still undecided.
Get your name out there.
So during the FastClick years, I stayed in touch with a bunch of my ValueClick friends, and they saw what I did at FastClick. And so I couldn't really resist it. I went back to ValueClick, connected with the CEO, Jim Zarley, who I'd known earlier, obviously, and came back in as the SVP of Business Development, and actually helped with the acquisition of FastClick for $214 million. So that worked really well for me because of my ownership stake in FastClick. It worked well for everybody. And we put the two networks together. A gentleman named Shane Halko was instrumental in that too. He built another company called Undertone Media that's still going and very successful. Yeah. So lots of people,
in and around. So how did the ValueClick FastClick merger work out? Did it go smoothly?
Relatively smoothly. I mean, there was some, the FastClick folks under the new CEO had been very anti-ValueClick, so it took a little while. It was helpful that I was kind of friendly with everybody and helped bring things together. It's interesting because at FastClick, our big claim to fame was the publisher to the publishers was the rev share. And when we got to ValueClick moved it to a 50-50 split. And so that was a big transition, but we pulled it off without really losing any customers.
So this brings us to Audience Science, one of my favorite paleo ed tech companies. So, and it had started out as Revenue Science, and it's switched to Audience Science. And can you tell us how you ended up there and what your role was in the beginning?
Yeah. So I was still in Santa Barbara.
Right.
Got a call from Bill Gossman, who was the CEO of Revenue Science at the time. Yeah. I think they were the first DMP in the space, marketing to publishers with the catchphrase. Mm-hmm. Reach who you want, when you want, with the right message. The way they got started was interesting, was they were doing analytics, and Wall Street Journal was one of their first customers. Mm-hmm. And Wall Street Journal said, hey, we could use this data to make all of our inventory more valuable, or the less valuable inventory more valuable.
Yeah.
And so that's what got the whole premise started. And Omar Tuwaka was there at the time, and CTO Bazem Nafady, and got to know those guys quite well then. And that was the idea was PMP for publishers to help them project their own data, so all within their own wall, onto their less valuable inventory and make it worth more, which was a great proposition. For us as a sales organization, meant that everything was dependent on the publishers doing that well, which is pretty tough when you kind of outsourcing all of that. There was one publisher that did very well, that was AOL.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was a pretty tough sell. You know, what's funny, by the way, is years later, Wall Street Journal, when I was CEO of Audience Science, called me up to ask me, why is your pixel on our page? We're writing a story and we want to call you out. And I said, well, you put it there. Your data, we never got written about for some reason. So
you just did what the customer said. Yeah. So what was your role in the beginning?
So I was the chief revenue officer. And one of the reasons I was brought in, the company had raised a lot of money before I got there, six figure millions. Yeah. And so the idea was to take that same technology and to use it to build an ad network. And that ad network we could use to generate cash to continue to support the company so that we could continue on our path of being a technology company. So we actually went the opposite of most companies, where instead of going from an ad network trying to become a technology company, we were
taking the other way. Oh man.
But it's a good business, and we had the most successful, we were at one time the top five ad network in the US as a behavioral targeting ad network. And every bit of data we ever used was contracted for and paid for. There was never any funny stuff that went on. And it did very, very well. And so that continued to grow. Was asked to step in as the CEO. And so I became the CEO and stayed on for three more years as the CEO.
So the years of the publisher DMP, as you describe it, when was that? What period was that?
It was in the mid-2000s, really.
Okay.
And I would go
2005.
Yeah. And I would go to speak to publishers and usually get rejected. What was interesting, I went into Timing Digital.
Yeah.
Pitched Kirk McDonald. And in the middle of my pitch, he stopped me and finished my pitch for me. And I literally started to tear up in the meeting. You get it. And Kirk and I have been friends ever since. In fact, later on, as he was president of PubMatic, he brought me in. So the company, you know, was successful. It would have been ideal to sell the company. AOL, as our biggest publisher, would have been a perfect acquisition acquirer. And frankly, our CEO kind of botched the opportunity to sell the company to them, but they were doing
asking for too much. That's the usual problem.
Let's just say not knowing how to ask. Let's go with that.
Yeah, okay. The
negotiation fell apart quickly. And then of course, we know the story is they bought Dakota.
Sure, yeah.
What's funny is that the first ever behavioral targeting event put on by MediaPost in New York was a Monday morning. I had to fly in on Sunday. And on the back cover of the program, it said, AOL, it was Revenue Science at the time, AOL and Revenue Science together forever, you know, parts all over the place and stuff like that. And that was the day they announced that they were buying Dakota. And completely took me by surprise. I'm on the stage with Kurt Fiebrants, and the entire conversation eroded and just became questions for him on getting acquired. And as I sat on stage, going, you know, with a couple negative looks.
Feeling like a little bit awkward.
Yeah. It took a couple of years to unwind. So it turned out that it was a good thing. Kind of the joke I made at the time is it solved our concentration or revenue concentration issues.
That's true. So speaking of that, so you had a relationship with Procter & Gamble, right?
Yeah.
The audience science. Yeah. So what was that relationship?
I'll tell you a little bit about that. We were very tight with Rate Media. It was our underlying exchange technology. You know, one of their biggest customers once they were acquired by Yahoo was P&G. So I got to know a bunch of folks there, including Bill Weiss. And P&G was talking to Yahoo about exchange and how to use it, using it for behavioral targeting. But Yahoo really didn't have the PMP chops to be able to support it. So Bill and I talked, and my goal was to get Yahoo to basically white label us to P&G and create a contingency that would mean that Yahoo would eventually have to buy Audience Science. So that was the strategy. Bill generously said, why don't you go contract with P&G yourself? So we ended up doing a direct deal with P&G, and funny enough, we ended up kind of pushing Yahoo out through the process. But that's where Hawkeye started, as a three-way relationship between Yahoo / Right Media, Audience Science, and P&G. And I think the deal, which you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to sign, was probably worth a few hundred million dollars in tech fees to Audience Science. Yeah. We'd also bought a DMP out of Germany called Wunderloop, who had deep European ties with P&G, so that made us even more important. And we fended off a lot of data companies trying to get in, with such as BlueKai and Xlate and others. It was a very good opportunity. You know, P&G was very much around creating means to control their data, control their definition of their audiences, to bid, get a response, and be able to decide what to send. So that fit very well into our structure, and it worked very well for a long time. What happened is, for me, is I realized that we weren't able to raise money. The VCs were not willing to do a recap, which was unfortunate. We went out to talk to the new VCs, and we were trying to raise a Series F. And you could imagine that started to have different meanings for all of us. And these VCs said our cap table was the most convoluted they'd ever seen. So they just weren't interested in getting involved in that. So hands were tied. A future of the company was clearly wholly dependent on P&G. And without an exit in sight, I decided to make my own exit. So great ride. Looked at, started the behavioral targeting standards consortium, you know, did all the things with the IAB to establish standards, and met a lot of great people. In fact, just thinking the other day on International Women's Day, I got to work with, you know, some great women like Denise Colella, Julie Clark, Julie Saxon, Ashley Luongo, and Marla Shimke, who have all gone on to other great things. So
yeah,
pretty good experience.
So you mentioned Project Hawkeye, which is legendary. What was Hawkeye exactly? Was it built for it?
Yeah. It's actually probably will never happen the way it happened. And again, so, you know, Procter & Gamble was relatively new to the digital space. They were still trying to figure out exactly how to leverage their clout in this new era of, auction-based, where the amount of money you spend is not really going to provide the kind of leverage that you had in the past. So their rightful notion was to build technology that would keep them ahead of everybody else. So they had a vision of what they wanted to do, but none of the pieces. It was a continuous set of meetings. We had project managers and product people. They had the same. Right Media did as well. And we would all get into a room and whiteboard and design and argue who's going to do what. But it did take quite a long time. I mean, a lot of the basics could be done right away, but to get to where it eventually did. And the reason why it'll never be repeated the same way is that every region globally for P&G signed off on using the same platform. So if you can imagine, you know, even China, right? So you've got local people pitching people that they know, and we were still the technology basis for them. I just don't think that's going to ever happen again.
Plus, I see. So all the data was on the same platform.
It was all on the same platform everywhere in the globe.
Wow.
You know, it took a long time to get different regions activated. Reliance on one technology, I think, didn't necessarily work out.
So the myth, though, the legend, I should say, that the DMP was invented as part of Project Hawkeye, it really is more about Audience Science's DMP, right?
Yes, that was the basis.
Publisher of DMP, which already existed.
It already existed, and we were, you know, what we basically did was use the same technology and enable it from the advertiser side, for the buy side. And then the fact that we work with a lot of publishers already allowed us to tie things together much easier as well.
So as audience science, though, you started with technology and then you headed the ad network and then became an ad network, behavioral ad network. Where did the revenue come from? Did you still sell technology?
So most of the revenue in the middle there came from the ad network.
Okay.
And we also built up relationships with hundreds of data providers. Mm-hmm. So that came to be valuable for Procter & Gamble. Even though Procter & Gamble wanted to own their own data assets, it would be quite some time till they could get there. Yes. So we convinced them that they should own their own data assets. In the meantime, we provide for them what they needed, and they shouldn't contract with anyone else, like Blue Pie or anyone else. So they did access the data we had available for some time until they built up their own assets. So that's where the ad network actually ended up being a catalyst for the DMP on the buy side. And then eventually we went on to build more and more of our own tech on ad delivery, as Right Media became less viable to do that.
Okay. So what happened? I know you left Audience Science. What happened to them ultimately?
Well, super high concentration on the one. Even if you go, I mean, you know, when you have a customer that big, they're going to be extremely demanding.
Of course.
They were not willing to speak publicly about the relationship. The first time that the relationship between P&G was an Audience Science just spoke about publicly was when they broke up. So that didn't.
I think it was a poorly kept secret, though.
Yeah,
it was. But you're right.
Well, you know, there were hints, of course. Yeah. But so that concentration, and then honestly, what happened at the end is that Audience Science had some business issues they were trying to resolve with P&G, and P&G didn't necessarily agree with how that was going, and said, you know what, let's diversify a little bit.
Get your name out there.
So ad tech obviously is in a time of transition, and you transition yourself to being an advisor to PubMatic. And so do you have any thoughts on the advertising technology business and predictions about the next year?
PubMatic has really evolved since I joined. And, you know, coming from a day when things were... you really didn't know what was going on behind the scenes to a world where transparency and responsible media and, you know, sustainability, all these kinds of things, I think is really driving the industry to an interesting place. PubMatic has always innovated along those lines. And I think there's starting to be some graying where it's not so clear that there's a DSP and an SSP. There's starting to be a lot more interchange between the two, and you know, where that goes remains to be seen, but there's definitely a change afoot.
It's interesting. That was the original vision I've heard. That, for instance, for the Trade Desk, the first pitch that Jeff Green put together had a buy side and a sell side together. They weren't necessarily separate.
It's interesting because Jeff still talks about being the advocate for the buy side, regardless if they're starting to go directly to supply with OpenPath. And, you know, PubMatic, another of the few high quality SSPs that are in existence, are the advocate for the publisher.
Thank you.
And it does take that kind of back and forth and balance to create the right little amount of value for both sides.
Yeah, it's true. Publishers do need an advocate. So.